Hi, I'm Alyssa Milano, and this is Sorry Not Sorry. The world is a dangerous place for LGBTQIA people. Not only do they have to fear hate and discrimination in communities, which would be bad enough, but now many of our governments are actively attacking their very existence. The Stonewall Inn Gives Back initiative is working to make sure safe spaces exist for LGBTQIA people across the nation. We're joined by Stacey Lentz and Angelica Christina to discuss.
The family of Next Benedict now conducting their own independent investigation into the case. Their death prompting a firestorm of outrage across social media, including posts from Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi.
Leaders with the Rainbow Youth Project say they've seen a huge increase in calls coming from Oklahoma.
Typically, we take on average 87 crisis contacts from Oklahoma per week. Just since Friday, we have taken over 300.
On June 28, 1969, riots broke out at the downtown New York City bar. At the time, homosexuality was illegal in the state of New York. Stonewall Inn was known as the place of refuge for the city's gay community.
As Florida's Board of Education agreed to ban classroom instruction about sexual orientation and gender identity in all grades except for health class.
Show the amendment approves.
Hi, my name is Stacey Lentz, and I'm fighting for safer spaces for LGBTQ plus folks all around the globe.
Hi, my name is Angelica Christina. I'm an actor, model, and activist, and also a board member of the Stonewall Inn Gives Back initiative, and I'm fighting for queer and trans liberation. Sorry, not sorry.
So thank you both so much for being a part of the podcast, Stacey and Angelica. Welcome to Sorry Not Sorry. Can you just start by telling us a little bit about you and the incredible work that you do? Stacey, you can go first.
Yeah, my name is Stacey Lentz, and I'm a co-owner of the Stonewall Inn, where Pride began here in New York City, as well as an LGBTQ activist. I'm the CEO of the Stonewall Inn Gives Back initiative, a nonprofit that I helped co-found, and we're really working for global equality and funding grassroots organizations by having a safe spaces program where we hold businesses, venues, bars, brands, any kind of company or corporation that says they're on the side of equality, we hold them accountable and make sure they are. So we're out there having conversations with them, encouraging them to use their platforms to support the LGBTQ community, not just during Pride, but 365 days a year, making sure that they have a code of conduct so everyone feels welcome and inclusive into their spaces, whether that be businesses or sporting venues, et cetera, and really keeping that fight alive through the Stonewall Inn Gives Back initiative.
And Angelica, how about you?
Yes. Hello, folks. My name is Angelica Christina. I am an actor, model, activist hailing from New York City, and I'm also on the board of the Stonewall Inn Gives Back initiative. I serve as the treasurer on the board, and I'm really excited to be here to talk about our Safe Spaces program.
We are so glad to have you. Stacey, I wonder if for our listeners who might not know, can you share some of the history of the Stonewall Inn and how it came to be such an important center of LGBTQIA life in the United States?
Sure. So the Stonewall Inn was an LGBTQ bar that opened in 1966 here in New York City. And in 1969, it was common for the police to raid LGBTQ bars. It was illegal to serve an LGBTQ plus person a drink. It was illegal for them to gather in social places. It was actually illegal for folks to wear articles of clothing that didn't match their gender. So think about that. And that wasn't very long ago. So it's crazy to think how far we've come, but how far we still have to go. So the Stonewall Inn was often raided, and it was a mafia-owned bar. And when the police would raid it for serving LGBTQ folks, they would pay off the police, the mafia would. The mafia at that time period, interesting enough, in the 60s, owned a lot of the LGBTQ spaces, quite frankly, because they saw money in our community. So that's what would happen. On one particular hot night on June 28th, 1969, the police came in and they decided to raid the bar that evening because the mob had not paid them off. But the patrons fought back for the first time ever in terms of saying, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. They barricaded the police inside the bar, and the riots lasted for around 6 days, where thousands of people, straight and gay, obviously, our straight allies were part of this as well, poured into the streets on Christopher Street and really protested for the first time. Because New York City was such a large media market and the Village Voice was down the street, it got national press attention. There were other raids and other riots and situations where the LGBTQ community stood up in other places like San Francisco and Philadelphia, but it is considered the birthplace because it really sparked a revolution. It was the first time that people like me, I actually wasn't born yet, I was born the next year, but folks like me and Kansas all across the country, it was the first time they could see, oh my God, there's others out there like me. And before the Stonewall riots, there was only about 2 to 3 LGBTQ organizations fighting for rights and equality. 1 year later, in 1970, when the first ever Pride March, which was called the Gay Liberation Front Parade March, happened, there were actually 200. So if you look at the kind of activism that was born out of the Stonewall Inn and the riots that occurred there in 1969, it's incredible to think about what that particular moment in history did to keep that fight alive consistently.
You mentioned that part of the work of the Stonewall Inn Gives Back initiative is about certifying safe spaces for LGBTQIA people. And I think we just have to mention, we have to speak for a moment about the death of Nex Benedict. For those who do not know, Nex is a non-binary, or was a non-binary high school student who died after being beat up by several other students in a school bathroom.
There are new details today about the death of an Oklahoma teenager the day after a physical altercation in a school restroom. Nex Benedict, who was non-binary, attended high school in Owosso, a suburb of Tulsa. Police say that an investigation is ongoing. But Nex's death is raising concerns in LGBTQ plus communities and igniting fear in some families and among students who identify as queer.
Can you talk a bit about what Nex and just other students like Nex face when their schools deny their identities?
I mean, you have to look at right now, our entire community is under attack, but especially LGBTQ children, especially trans and non-binary children. We are being used as political fodder in an election cycle right now, and especially children. If you look at the 600 laws last year that were introduced at the state level, attacking gender-affirming care, all kinds of horrific bills that they tried to turn into laws at the state level, and many of them being passed. And then you look at, you know, what some of these groups have done in terms of going into places like Oklahoma, places where Nex was in school and just trying to show up and go to school safely and get an education like anybody else, a basic human right. Faced that day, you have to look at how words can turn into violence and how adults are using, especially trans and non-binary children, as political pawns in a game that leads to death. And this is a perfect example of how that happened.
My son is in middle school and comes from a very progressive family, and we talk about everything. And, you know, he went to a very progressive elementary school where the principal actually comes out to the fifth graders so that they can feel comfortable doing that themselves. Cut to, Milo now goes to a Catholic school, and I feel like the work that we have done up to this point which I thought was such a solid foundation, isn't enough to not be impacted by other people's words. For instance, he said to me the other day, now this is my son, who clearly has been involved with politics since day one and campaigning, very socially aware, also very philanthropic. He says to me the other day, well, Mom, I don't know what Biden has done. And it was such a strong realization for me to know that it doesn't really matter what parents are teaching them at home. They can just grab on to one thing and it becomes, because their brain is not fully developed, there is no nuance. So it does become very black and white. And so we particularly have to be more considerate of that when we are educating and empowering our young people and what words we choose around them. And it was just like the first moment where I was like, you've been my son for 12 years. How are you even saying this to me? I don't know. I just think, you know, this also goes to the Catholic Church. Angelica, you were recently at the funeral of Cecilia Gentile, which was cut short by the Catholic Church when they discovered that she was a trans activist.
New developments following the funeral of transgender community leader and performer Cecilia Gentile at St. Patrick's Cathedral this week. The New York Archdiocese is now condemning the service. Pews at the historic Catholic Church were packed with mourners for Gentile, who at one time professed to be an atheist in her off-Broadway show. In a statement today, Pastor Enrique Salvo said in part, quote, the cathedral only knew that family and friends were requesting a funeral mass for a Catholic and had no idea our welcome and prayer would be degraded in such a sacrilegious and deceptive way.
Can you tell us a little bit about Cecilia and what it meant to have her funeral targeted in this way?
Let me just say, Cecilia Gentile, for me as a Latina trans woman, she embodied all of the possibilities. She was a successful actor, a model, a businesswoman, an activist. She stood for liberation for us all. She wanted unity for us all. And what a tragedy it is to have lost her. Honestly, truly, it's still a little bit difficult to talk about her because she meant so much to so many people, especially in this community, and it is a tragedy that we lost her. And it's equally a tragedy that this woman can't be laid to rest in peace. I believe that funerals are for the living. They're for the living to mourn the dead. And St. Patrick's Cathedral is a space. It's a space that is supposed to be meant for people that are looking to connect with God, that are looking to connect with those that have passed on. And that's what the 1,000+ people that showed up for her funeral, that's what they were looking for. They were looking to pay their respects to an amazing activist and mother to our community. And as someone, I actually went to Catholic school from first grade all the way through eighth grade. And I can only say it was a hellish experience as a trans person, as a child that was exhibiting very feminine attributes, but was assigned male at birth. I was taunted and teased and brutalized nearly every single day. I had several absences from school every year because I was too afraid to go to school because I was being taunted and nothing was done about it. I reported it to the principal on several occasions. I reported it to my teachers on several occasions. Nothing was ever done. And with the murder, we need to call this what it is. What happened to next Benedict was a murder. It's so tragic that things have gotten to a place where our community members are being murdered simply for existing. Next simply wanted to go to the bathroom, something that is a human need, a human right to go to the restroom. And They barely made it out alive and died several hours later. It's horrible what's happening. And to Stacey's point, we are being used as political pawns. Trans people, and especially our youth, are being used as political pawns. And it is dangerous. The rhetoric that is being spread about trans folks is dangerous. And it is murdering us. It is leading to the murders of trans folks. And we really need to address that.
I mean, I hate that this is happening, but I'm glad you've both brought up the idea that many bad actors in politics are using trans folks broadly and LGBTQ plus people additionally as a political fodder. And I think back to 2004, because George W. Bush did this, Karl Rove did this with marriage amendments on bills, and it probably, he successfully manipulated that hate and bias in such a way that it probably got him reelected. And I worry about that for so many reasons in this election. And I think about what's happening right now. You look at Oklahoma, where Next Benedict lived, legislature there passed a bathroom bill. And for folks who don't know, that basically demands that students use bathrooms that match the gender that they are assigned at birth, which appears on their birth certificate. That same state demands that all government agencies use the names and genders that appear on birth certificates when doing official business. Across the country, other states are taking actions like this. Then you see school boards and libraries are facing bans and challenges of books that feature LGBTQ plus characters. So I'm just going to ask a question here of both of you that I think has a fairly obvious answer. And I know that it has an obvious answer, but just so that it's on the record and then the follow-up to it. So the question is, do these laws, do they stop LGBTQ plus people from existing? And if not, then what the hell is the point of them?
First of all, obviously it doesn't stop this from existing, right? If anything, it makes our community more resilient and want to fight back even more and live in that vein of keeping the Stonewall Inn legacy alive by protesting and fight back and doing those kind of things. And it's absolutely the reason why it's happening is for folks to get reelected. To divide us, to divide our country at a national level, at a state level, so they can win elections. This is all about dividing, using hateful speech, hateful language, hateful laws to win votes. And it's got to stop because it's murdering our children in our community.
Also, I'm constantly amazed at how the party that is supposed to not be for big government seems to be wanting to legislate about all of our lives. I don't understand how people don't see through that. Let's talk about the certification and what goes into certifying a safe space.
Essentially, our safer spaces are more important now than ever, especially with our rights being attacked left and right. And so what the initiative is, it's essentially reaching out to different venues, different businesses, and saying, hey, do you have a gender-neutral bathroom on site? Are you donating to campaigns that are anti-LGBTQ?
What we did is we really, in 2019, we wanted to launch a safe space certification program because we were seeing our community under attack. And we did a nationwide survey where close to 97% of LGBTQ folks across the country felt like they didn't have enough safe spaces.
For young lesbian, gay, bi, and trans people, fear is a part of their daily lives. You can't figure out who you're going to be if you don't feel safe who you are.
To promote acceptance and safety and affirmation and ultimately equality for LGBTQ youth is very much in line with the values of our country here in America.
Almost 87% felt like there should be an organization that certifies places as being safe for our community, and that there should be some kind of criteria or standard. Being the Stonewall Inn Gives Back initiative and the official and only nonprofit of the Stonewall Inn, we thought we were the perfect people to take this on because the Stonewall Inn, for better or worse, was one of our community's original safe spaces. We went to some of the most marginalized areas of the country and asked the question, two questions really. What do you think makes a safe space? And what do you want to see businesses, corporations, venues, bars, restaurants, shops, et cetera, do to be more responsible corporate citizens to support our community? So we went and we worked with the Rainbow Borderland Center in El Paso, Texas. And we said, what makes LGBTQ immigrants living in El Paso, Texas feel safe? We went to the TKO Society, which is a Black trans-led organization in Alabama, and said, what makes you feel like is a safe space? And what do you want to see businesses and companies do to support the community? What does religion play in safe spaces? So we worked with the Utah Pride Center to talk to predominantly LGBTQ folks that grew up in the Mormon church about what they felt made it safe space. And then we wanted to know, like, how does our youth feel? So we worked with a youth organization, predominantly trans and non-binary students in Nashville, Tennessee, called Just Us. And so we conducted focus groups to come up with 10 criteria. Some of the criteria is, as Angelica mentioned, making sure that you have a gender-neutral bathroom on premise, making sure that you don't donate to anti-LGBTQ legislators, making sure you put your money where your mouth is and donate to an LGBTQ nonprofit, doesn't have to be ours, making sure that you have some kind of code of conduct posted on site, that you support the community 365 days a year, not just during Pride Month. That was a big one, especially among young folks. And also there's two training components. We work with Jennifer Brown Consulting, a globally owned LGBTQ consulting firm, to come up with two training modules where all the employees must take this training that really talks about why safe spaces are important and the biases that we bring into work and to other places and gender identity and gender expression. Just a basic understanding of those kind of concepts. So those are some of the things that we roll out in the certification process. And then most of the funding that we get from these places, we then give to grassroots organizations all across the globe. We funded folks like Iraqi Queer, which is based in Iraq, obviously, only LGBTQ organization in Iraq. We've helped fund groups in Uganda, in Brazil. We talked about the Catholic Church. We funded folks in Italy. We went and given a grant recently to an LGBTQ center in Bologna. And Italy, because of the Catholic Church, has some crazy policies around LGBTQ adoption and adoption laws that they're fighting still now in 2024. So we're doing global work and really giving those funds to those places that maybe haven't had their Stonewall moment, where it's still tough to be LGBTQ in 2024. And so we're super proud of the work that we're doing. And it's been a coalition of community groups that came together to really create this program. And hopefully we're starting the conversation around safer spaces through this program. And so we can then keep that conversation going around how to make schools safer, how to make places of worship safer, how to make even within government safer, everything we can as our community is under attack, because we're going to see between now and the election cycle, we're going to be under attack even more. The rhetoric's going to get amped up. I'm worried that we're going to see more violence against our community. And again, we could see all the progress that we've made in recent years go backwards. And that's why we've got to keep this fight and keep having these conversations around safer spaces and making sure our community feels welcome and included and that every place is inclusive.
You mentioned the criteria of what makes a safe space. I guess my question is, how do you get organizations and businesses and corporations which want to do the right thing, but just face institutional, cultural, or political barriers to overcome? And why should they have incentive to overcome those barriers to complete the certification process? Like, has that been difficult?
It can be difficult, especially when you see, you know, DE&I under attack on a national level. If you look at places like Florida and what's happening, you can't even utter the word DE&I in certain businesses. So yeah, it can be difficult. But the reality is, we say this often, Gen Z will always be a generation that supports equality. They will not buy from organization as a consumer. They will not spend their money, their time, or any of those revenue generating opportunities that businesses may have to market to them if you're not on the side of equality. So I would argue within 40 years, if you don't get on the side of equality, you won't exist.
Forget about red or blue. Let's just make this green. Let us show the sector how valuable it is to invest in diversity, equity, and inclusion.
I would also say there's study after study that shows that diversity is good for business. It's literally good for the bottom line to have diverse folks in the room in top positions of leadership all the way up and down the food chain of an organization giving input. Diversity is proven to help the bottom line of an organization as well.
One of the things that we like is to imagine a world where things start going right. So I would just love to hear, like, what changes for LGBTQ plus folks once a space is certified in their community, when they have access to a safe space? How are things different?
I think having a safe space is so crucial to our well-being, honestly. We live in a world where we can't help but leave the house, right? We have to go to a grocery store. We tend to want to go to bars to frequent with friends. I think having a certified LGBTQIA plus safe space for our community is so beneficial. And like Stacey said, it's good money. You get extra money from the community if you're servicing the community, right? It's important.
The reason why we wanted to start this program is we felt a need that we could not be our authentic selves and express ourselves, whether that was through our gender identity or holding hands with our partner in certain spaces and things of that nature. And our community absolutely felt like they couldn't thrive and show up and be their authentic self in certain places and spaces. And that's why we wanted to start this, whether it was going to a job, whether it was going to, for example, the U.S. Open became a safe space this year. The New York City Marathon became a certified safe space. There are sporting events. Anything you do in public life, a lot of LGBTQ folks just felt like they weren't always safe in those spaces. So we really wanted to start this process to thrive and be our authentic selves and show up fully.
As our authentic selves, exactly.
And Angelica, you went to, correct me if I'm wrong, but you went to the nation's first accredited LGBTQIA high school?
I sure did. The Harvey Milk High School, located on Astor Place.
Tell me about that.
Well, the story that led up to how I found out about Harvey Milk is a bit sad. So as I mentioned, I had struggled with suicide ideation as a child. I was bullied so much that I was led to having suicidal thoughts. And so I ended up in the hospital. Now, the plus side to this story, the fairy tale, if you will, is that my doctor, who was assigned to me at the time at Lenox Hill Hospital, they had told me about the Harvey Milk High School. And I was maybe 12, 13 years old, and I was in utter disbelief. I was like, you mean to tell me that there's an LGBTQ plus high school in New York that I could potentially go to? Sign me up, like sign me up immediately. So I had applied in either 1998 or 1999. The school had a capacity of 75 students. So the waiting list was out the door. And it was by a miracle that I was accepted. And what a revelation to be in a space of queer and trans people and getting to learn about who I was as a trans person.
I can't say enough good things about the students that attend Harvey Milk High School.
My name is Isaac Nasir Serena. I am 16 years old. I go to Harvey Milk. I am a junior, and my pronouns are he, him.
They are beautiful. They are mature. They are thoughtful. They are compassionate.
My name is Ty Thomas, and I use she, her pronouns.
Hi, my name is Morgan Jenkins, and I use she, her pronouns.
And I truly believe it's because of so much that they've had to experience and the complexities that they've had to process about their own lives, about their coming out stories, about being possibly rejected by the people that they love the most.
This is prior to the internet days when you didn't have access to information. And so I was grasping for knowledge of what it was that I was experiencing, but I couldn't put words to what it was that I was feeling until I got to Harvey Milk High School. And it changed my life for the better. It was a space where I was able to express myself, and it's still in existence today, which is so wonderful. And we need more spaces like Harvey Milk in the world, honestly.
What year was this?
So I got into the school in 2000 and I graduated in 2003.
So we are, in fact, moving backwards. It is so blatantly apparent. And there seems to be just this expansion of anti-LGBTQIA hate, not only in the government, right, but in the hearts of citizens. We've seen literal Nazis marching at drag brunches. There are hate organizations like Moms for Liberty working to expand the legislative power of these groups. I think the question is, what do you want your allies to know about the current lived experience of the LGBTQIA people in the United States right now?
Personally, I would want people to understand that this is a very precarious situation that we find ourselves in. It's a very dangerous time. Like you said, Alyssa, we're essentially going back in time. Instead of moving forward, we're going back in time. And so what we want to see is for people to essentially leave us alone, to stop attacking us, to stop attacking our rights. We as queer and trans people, we are just trying to live our lives. I think that I want our supporters to understand is that we're just trying to live our lives. We're just trying to be ourselves. By attacking our rights, you are not eliminating the community because you can't do that. We are who we are. We are born as we are. And some of us just so happen to be born trans or born queer. It happens. And you cannot erase that. And so what hope is that people start speaking up more. People start utilizing their privileges and speaking up about the injustice that we see every single day because it is constant. As a trans activist, I'm tired. Like, honestly, I'm exhausted. It's exhausting to constantly be speaking out against these horrible bills and speaking out about the constant murders of trans and queer people. It's exhausting. We do the work because we have no choice in the matter. It's exhausting. And so I think when I look at my cis friends and when I look at my heterosexual friends, I look at how they speak up in moments where I need them to the most. And I ask them to stand up and to admit that you know a trans person, you know a queer person, you're seeing them be attacked. Say something, stand up and say something.
And I would add to that, especially since we're in election year, vote. All know an LGBTQ person that you love and care about. So why vote against us? And to remember that right now, especially in the US, we are literally fighting fascism. So let's fight that and not each other. We all need to come together and we need our allies. And that's why we need more safe spaces and our corporate partners to use their platforms to fight for us as well. So that's what we're really looking for from our allies and folks that really want to help. It really is about voting, especially in places at the state level. I would argue that some of the biggest damage is being done at the state level. And that's where a lot of these laws will be passed, maybe not on a federal level. We've got to have that happen, even all the way down to the school boards, right? All the way.
That openly gay Sarasota school board member walked out of Tuesday's meeting after a member of the public used the public comment session to share sentiments many deem homophobic. And tonight, that school board member, Tom Edwards, is speaking out and sharing his perspective about what happened. That school board member, Tom Edwards, storming out of the March 21st meeting over this.
What Tom stands for and what Tom wants to do to our children in this school district isn't what a majority of what
got. Earlier on March 7, this comment from Sarasota mom Melissa Bacondi.
It's perfectly acceptable that Mr. Edwards, a gay liquor salesman and supporter of LGBTQ grooming events like QueerCon, go into our schools, read to our young children, and post their pictures on his Facebook page. Mr. Edwards appears to be a lawbreaker and an LGBTQ groomer.
Oh. Board Chair Bridget Ziegler apologized for Bacondi's comments.
Because that was wildly uncomfortable and inappropriate, and I apologize to Mr. Edwards.
We've got to get that, and that's got to happen. It's about voting and being active and in those roles for LGBTQ folks and all marginalized communities, quite frankly.
Tell about your gala.
Oh my God, it was incredible. To see the community's response to the work that we've done and also to the recipients of the awards that we awarded that night. Like, I don't want to take any words out of Stacey's mouth, but it honestly was breathtaking to see that community sees the work that we're doing and what we're trying to achieve. And they showed up that night. They showed up in full regalia, like everyone looked amazing. And it was incredible. We had Peppermint from RuPaul's Drag Race host, and she was incredible. We raised, Stacey, how much did we raise again? $45,000?
In total, but that was just like on the profit side, $150,000 in our first go round. I would also say we gave out the first ever, what we called the Stonewall Inn bricks that were glass blown by Deborah Krasinski, who won the first ever, I don't know if you've seen the show on Netflix called Blown Away, but she won season one and is a lesbian here in New York. We went to her and we said, we want something to replicate a glass brick. And she did this thoughtful, incredible piece. And so there were handmade pieces. And we gave out the Global Icon Award to Dominique Jackson for her incredible work. And then we also gave out our Global Activist Award to Dr. Frank Masija, who's doing incredible work on the ground in Uganda, which is a country that has a death penalty against being gay. And then in addition to Community Activist Award to Amber Hikes, the first ever Youth Award to the Gender Cool Project, which is really out there saying, don't use me as political fodder. And they're amazing at storytelling and having conversations, especially in states that are being targeted against trans and non-binary kids. And also Patrick Golino from Stoli as a business rep who helped create safe spaces. So it was really cool to have the first ever Stonewall Inn Brick Awards and to see the love in that room and to really talk about the work that needs to continue to be done as we keep that fight alive that started in 1969, Christopher Street at the Stonewall Inn.
You mentioned the work that still needs to be done. So what is CIGBE's most critical need right now?
I think most critical right now is continuing to get more safer spaces and to get more funding and to amplify the voices of the grassroots organizations that's doing the work. With Stonewall Inn and CIGBE, we also have a platform and we're really good at working with grassroots organizations that are doing the work in those states. We fund typically a lot of organizations that are in, for lack of a better word, red states or all across the globe in countries where it's tough to be LGBTQ. And where we see all these laws popping up, because they're the ones on the ground. They're the ones who are fighting the battle day in and day out. And we have an opportunity, responsibility, and the ability through the Stonewall Inn and the Stonewall Inn Gives Back Initiative platform to amplify those voices and get people to know about what they're doing on the ground, in addition to making sure that we're holding these corporations accountable and saying, we need your help. We're under attack. Use the power of the business, use the power of your venue, use your power to help our community.
And how can people support the work?
You can support our work by going to stonewallinitiative.org and you can donate there. But I would also encourage you to any of your listeners out there, any place that you work, shop, go in to eat, go see a concert, anything like that, talk to folks about becoming a Stonewall and Gives Back Initiative safe space. Start that conversation. Start the conversation around how the community is being attacked and recommend that they look at becoming a certified safe space. The more of those that we have across the country, the better it is for our community. And it also helps fund these grassroots organizations doing the work on the ground in these states and these places that need it the most.
And finally, what gives you hope?
Wow, what gives me hope? I honestly feel so much hope with the younger generation. Like, you ever hear that saying, the kids are all right? Our younger generation, the kids are all right. They get it. And Cecilia, may she rest in peace, she used to talk about this all the time. The younger generation, our queer generations, they give us hope. They truly do, because they're in this fight just as much as we are. And they're the ones that have to live with the consequences of what are happening right now. They're the ones that are going to be affected by it more than the older generations. And so I really look to youth like Nex, who had the audacity to be who they were in spite of adversity, because I can't even imagine being a non-binary child in Oklahoma and having my very life politicized and monopolized. I really look to the younger generations for hope. They truly give me hope because, like I said, they have the audacity to be who they are in spite of adversity. And there's something to be said about that.
What gives me hope is that there is a group of folks out there like Angelica, Alyssa. There's a group of folks that are using everything they can and their platforms to fight back. And we come from a long line of folks that fought back for the rights that we have today. It's really exciting to see so many people supporting our community, whether it's the incredible voices that are the most marginalized, that are out there in the streets fighting every day and picking up the torch of people like Silver Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, or whether it's our allies that are, hey, I'm going to use my platform and my time to have conversations with people that are keeping that fight alive and keeping that legacy alive. So that's what gives me hope, is that we come from a generation of folks that fought so we could get here. And I think we know that. And there's a whole bunch of us that want to continue that fight.
Well, Stacey and Angelica, you give us hope. Thank you for all you do and for being a part of the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Dear trans kids,
my dazzling trans youngsters,
my young trans powerhouses,
my courageous trans bunnies,
beautiful, extraordinary trans kids. Hi, we love you. That wasn't part of the script, but I added it.
You're extraordinary.
You're inspiring.
You're exactly who you're supposed to be.
Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
No one can erase who you are, no matter how hard they try. You are a gift to this world.
Next Benedict should be alive today. They are not. And they are not in part because their government, which should be protecting children like Next, instead legislated against their very identity, placing them in a dangerous place every single time they went to school. And this from a legislature which claims to be pro-life. Fuck them. Fuck every single person who claims to be pro-life while spreading anti-LGBTQIA hate. It would cost them nothing to respect their identities and just offer kindness. But their cruelty, their hate, their denial of the value of the LGBTQIA members of their communities, it cost those people everything. People like Next mattered. Next deserved a school which would have cherished them, protected them, offered them a safe space. I am so grateful to the Stonewall Inn Gives Back Initiative for the life-saving work that they are doing.
Sorry Not Sorry is executive produced by Alyssa Milano. That's me. Our producer is Ben Jackson, audio editing and engineering by Maciej Lewandowski, and music by Josh Cook, Alicia Eagle, and Milo Bugliari. Don't forget to rate, review, and spread the word. Sorry, not sorry.